This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest studios in La Crosse. Today on the program, we're going to hear about efforts underway to help organizations that are helping individuals negatively impacted by COVID-19. And speaking of negatively impacted, no one has borne the brunt more than the small business community. Many of them had to close for a time. Most of them have had to offer reduced services for months now. We'll speak about a program that is offering some grant funds to small businesses in the Cooley region. First today, though, we're talking to Shelley Fortner of the Hunger Task Force. Just as soon as people started being laid off and losing income due to COVID-19, due to the shutdown that was in place for a couple of months, the Hunger Task Force did what they always do, which is offer opportunities to help and offer services to those in need. Shelley, thank you very much for joining us today.
Absolutely. It's good to talk with you.
So one of the most noticeable things that you've been doing is these food drive Fridays during the COVID-19 pandemic. Not every single week. It took a couple of weeks to get it off the ground, but you've been doing them for well over a month now, maybe 2 months. And I want to hear your assessment of how that's been going.
You know, beginning of the year, March specifically, when we were starting to hear about the COVID-19, and we were concerned about what was going to happen to, you know, obviously to workers or to low-income people, and how are they going to get the food supplies that they need. And then we had a number of our fundraisers have to cancel because of the gathering amounts and restrictions and such. And so we actually, we knew we had to step up. We weren't sure how we were going to do it, but we were a little concerned about how we were going to make it through this time. And, you know, it was a short conversation with the La Crosse County Health Department, and they reached out to all of the Rotary groups, and Food Drive Fridays was born. We started the first food drive on April 17th, and, you know, it was an amazing start, just an amazing start. So every week we have been, you know, collecting food and cash donations. It has gone strong for now into week 7.
This week, because of when our show airs, there's a little bit of an explanation here. If you're listening to the program on Friday on the Ideas Network on WHLA, you still have an opportunity to participate in Food Drive Fridays. If you're listening to this program on Saturday on WLSU or online, we'll have some information later in this conversation about how you can contribute to the Hunger Task Force. But for those people who are listening on Friday and still have the opportunity to participate in Food Drive Fridays, what do they have to know, Shelley?
Well, they have to know that we are going to be collecting both food and monetary donations at 3 locations. One is up by Valley View Mall, by Macy's. The other is in the Big Lots parking lot on the south side. And then we have a county parking lot, which is downtown. This goes from 11 to 1 on Friday. So you've got a couple hours there to get to one of these locations and do the donation. We have had, you know, such strong supporters of this drive. We had an initial anonymous couple say, we want to help and we want to help now. So we will match all contributions up to $25,000. We made that match within the first couple of weeks. You know, from there, Firefighters Credit Union says, we want in. And so they have now pledged their $50,000 match. It's really been a great thing for us week after week to be able to say we've got, you know, donors in the community. They're going to match community dollars, and it's just going to be double everything. So really have had a great turnout every week. The last couple of weeks have been down a little bit, but, you know, it's been 6-7 weeks strong. It's truly amazing what the community's come through for us.
So when people come to donate, you're able to take monetary donations or food donations. What kind of food donations can you accept?
We can accept non-perishables. We've had some perishable donations in there. It's real difficult for us when we're trying to sort the food when we get it back to the warehouse that we make sure that we do not have anything that's perishable, please, just non-perishable. And the 5 biggest things that we're looking for are always tuna, peanut butter, pasta sauce, and canned fruit. Those are things that they're just the staples, and the agencies that we serve are asking for those pretty much consistently.
Talking about the agencies that you serve, how have requests been going the last few weeks, or the needs in the communities that you serve? Because you distribute to a bunch of different, you're a food bank that distributes food to a bunch of different pantries in the area. So talk about like the increased need as people have had fluctuating employment over the last couple of months.
Absolutely. It's been, it's been an interesting couple of months. We started out serving 118 different programs. We're in 7 counties. The key for us is we're free and we're local. Anybody that is closer to us than another can have our services. Now in 7 counties, primarily the majority of the area we serve is right here in La Crosse County. And we have seen some of those pantries due to COVID have to change the way they're doing things. They've gone from people coming into their pantry to having pre-packed boxes handed out the door. We've had people who are now doing their program. We've had some that had to close just because they didn't have the means to do things any other way. But then we've had others that have kind of stepped up and said, okay, we'll do a distribution, but it's going to be a little different. It's not going to be out of a food pantry. It's going to be maybe over by Logan High School, they have a distribution to their north side 3 times a week. And it's right outside. It's a drive-up kind of thing. And they're seeing 400 to 500 families every time that they hold that distribution. Those numbers for us are definitely increased. We're seeing, people that we've never seen at pantries before. They may not necessarily be who you think are low income. But maybe somebody, now there used to be 2 incomes in the household. Now there's only 1 because businesses had to close or folks are getting furloughed. It is a different situation. And so the numbers are certainly not decreasing. If anything, we're seeing people who never needed us before.
Before our official interview began, we were talking a little bit about nonprofit organizations. You and I both have experience working with nonprofit organizations. And it's interesting to look at the funding mechanism for them because you can apply for grants and a lot of the larger, bigger chunks of funding come in the forms of grants. But grantors right. often want to be part of a program with a name and they want their funds to go, either directly to impacted people or immediately out in the community or something very, very visible like that. But those right. dollars to pay the janitor, those dollars to fix the refrigerator, those are harder dollars to come by. And I guess I'm guessing that's where these individual donors making these contributions become so important to you.
Absolutely. They make a huge, huge difference. It's really difficult as a nonprofit. You're right. Nonprofits we don't have a product to sell. We do not have income coming in on a regular basis. So our program, basically a nonprofit, is overhead. We've got staff. We've got, lights and utilities. We've got freezers and trucks to run. Because we don't have any certified income from something that we're selling, pretty much a nonprofit is overhead. Now, certainly, basically, I tell people, don't look at overhead impact. What is it that we're doing? What is our final product? We're going through, we're collecting and distributing over 2.5 million pounds of food to people in need. That's the final product. That's where your dollars towards. And how we get there is really, nonprofits always been good stewards of what they've given and have to be very careful about expenses. But the end product is people need to see.
If people are interested in contributing, finding more about the Hunger Task Force, in volunteering as those opportunities become more and more available, where can they find that information?
Well, certainly we are always open to have people come visit our warehouse. Sometimes people just get it when they walk in the door, So I'd like to invite them to come in and take a look at what we're doing. There's always someone here who has time to show people around. You can look on our website at www.htf.org. A lot of information about both the food recovery program and the Cane Street Community Garden, and just see what we're doing.
You mentioned the website. Your cell phone clicked a little bit there, so why don't you repeat that website once more for people who didn't catch it?
www.lacrossehtf.org.
LacrosseHTF.org, as in Lacrosse Hunger Task Force.
Correct.
So before we go, I want to make sure that I talk to you about the organizations that you serve. And if someone runs a food pantry at their community center, at their church, in their area that feels like they might qualify to be a member of yours, how can they find information and how can they get in touch with you to talk about that?
Definitely call our office, 608-793-1002. We will talk them through the process. It's an application process, but we're very simple. And anybody that is in need and is a nonprofit, 501c3, serving people in need, they have access to our food. And unlike other banks, we have a tagline that says free and local. We never charge for our food to the agencies that we serve because we're lucky enough to get all of those food donations in for free as well. So we don't feel like pantries should be paying for food, especially if it's given to us. And so, rural counties, I'm really pleased to actually be serving more of the rural areas like Ketchton and Whitehall over in Tremplo County and some of the smaller pantries in Vernon County and Monroe. And surprisingly, during this, the different times that we're going through, those rural pantries are really, really meeting their need, and they're staying open, and they're doing the best we can. So we're working more with rural areas right now, which I think is very helpful.
Is there, as people are donating food, if somebody wants to organize a food drive for the Hunger Task Force, is there a coordinating effort that they need to go through? Is there a form that they need to fill out on the website, or is it as simple as putting up a box and a sign and making a delivery to the task force?
Well, you can do that, certainly that simple way. We have kind of a neat document on our website. It's called How to Hold a Food Drive. It gives you ideas. It gives you the procedure, but how food drives fun, or to give it a theme example. Those are some of the things that this document will help people with. Look that over, but it could be just as simple as setting up a box and bringing it in. If you want to do something larger, in larger scale, we certainly could help with organization and promotion of that. So there's a number of different ways you can help.
And all that information, I would imagine, on the website, lacrossehtf.org.
Yes, it is.
Shelley Fortner is with the Hunger Task Force in La Crosse. Shelley, thank you very much for your work and for joining us today on Newsmakers.
Thank you.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studios. Our website where you can find more information is wpr.org/newsmakers. We've got much more coming up, so stay tuned. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our studios in La Crosse. Thank you very much for joining us today. We're talking about COVID-19's impact on some of the most vulnerable people in our community and what some organizations are doing to help. Joining us for that portion of our conversation is Jamie Schlegel. She's the executive director of the La Crosse Community Foundation. Jamie, thank you very, very much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Ezra.
Absolutely. So we're talking about what the Community Foundation is doing. And I know we talked to you early on along with the Great Rivers United Way, and you were working together to establish a fund, which I think now is called the La Crosse Area Emergency Response Fund. Talk to me about that fund and how you're using it to identify areas where organizations need help.
Well, we knew when this pandemic was really starting to settle down in our country that particularly our community, which is incredibly generous, we would have folks who wanted to help and wanted to know how they could most effectively help. And so that's when we decided to partner with Great Rivers United Way to launch this fund. Our vision was really to provide a central trusted source where people who were in a financial position to help could give and use our existing relationships and nonprofits, knowledge of nonprofits in the community to help rapidly deploy those resources to organizations who were serving the most vulnerable populations in our community. So it launched March 18th. We've raised $101,056,000 to date and have already spent $750,000 of that to several nonprofit organizations in the La Crosse County.
So the organizations that you grant those funds to are the ones who are really dealing person to person and have a history of doing so with the people in need. Talk about what some of the organizations you're working with.
Right. We decided to set the fund up that way because we wanted to know that the money was being given to trusted organizations who had a history of serving individuals who needed help. So just a handful of the biggest organizations we've supported. The first is Cooley Cap. Cooley Cap right away established a emergency response fund themselves to help individuals who were economically impacted. And so I think the average monthly support folks have gotten from that fund at Cooley Cap is somewhere between $600 to $700 to help pay mortgage payments, rent, car payments, utilities, buy groceries. The next two biggest grants that we've made were related to child care for essential workers. The YMCA of La Crosse here early on opened up child care to the community for folks who still had to go to work but didn't have anywhere to send their kids and also perhaps couldn't afford to pay the normal rate. And so we helped support that at YMCA, YWCA, and then all just yesterday we approved a $50,000 grant to the Boys and Girls Club, who is opening up summer care at five of their clubs across La Crosse County.
So these are the organizations who are really, really helping. People have found themselves impacted by COVID-19 in ways that they might not have anticipated. I mean, these are not people who were... obviously, the very, very poor were affected anyway, but a lot of the people who were surprisingly affected were people whose jobs were suddenly lost. They hadn't anticipated that. Or like you said, essential workers who might not have had to previously make child care arrangements because maybe their kids were at school or they had other child care options or they had flexibility in their schedule. And now all of a sudden, with those things erased, they had to find something to do. What are you hearing from the organizations that you're helping in terms of how those funds have been able to be put to use?
The things that we're hearing is just incredible gratitude and being able to connect those gifts from generous individuals in our community to those organizations. I mean, we're paying grants in under 72 hours, which is unheard of in the grant-making world, and it's allowing them to be able to turn around and provide immediate support to those who need it. Another overwhelming common theme that I've been hearing is something that you just touched on, that they're helping folks who they've never had to help before because, you know, they were living kind of right on the lines of being able to meet their needs on their own, and then this pandemic happened, and they didn't have a safety net set up. And so I just think that we're so thankful to live in a community, in a small community area where people want to help and don't judge others when they need to ask for help.
Who is funding the La Crosse Area Emergency Response Fund? Is it coming from one of the sets of funds managed by the Community Foundation, or are various people contributing to that? How does it work?
It's all various people. The vast majority of it is actually new gifts, so not assets that we already had here at the Community Foundation or at Great Rivers United Way. It is businesses, individuals. Of course, Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration made a $500,000 gift early on, so that accounts for almost half of what the fund has raised to date. But it is new gifts in our community, people who said, wow, I'm so thankful and blessed to be okay, to still have a paycheck coming in or to still be able to pay my bills. I know there are many people who, for the first time, aren't in that position and I want to help. And so this fund gives them an easy place to provide help.
You know, it's hard to see anything being truly, truly business as usual for a long time, but things are starting to open and some things are more open than others. But yet the pandemic is not nearly over by any means. And so this, you know, areas of need could be going on for a long time. Do you anticipate leaving this fund active for the foreseeable future?
We do. All of the research we've done, conversations we've had with other community foundations across the country, we know that sadly this is really just the beginning for a lot of our organizations and for a lot of our folks. Even if they do go back to work, it's a new normal. It doesn't look the same, right? And so we know that there are going to continue to be needs that we want to be able to support nonprofits who are coming up with solutions quickly to be able to help continue to meet their mission and serve their clients' needs. And then we're looking to the long term, too, and how we can use our other assets that we already have here through our regular grant making to help our nonprofits survive. You know, so much of what makes La Crosse a great place to live is all of these incredible organizations we have here who rely on philanthropy to operate. And we want those to survive post-pandemic to be able to continue to enjoy this incredible quality of life. And so I think that's what our phase two is going to be here at the Community Foundation, is ensuring everyone can get through this to whatever our new normal is, whenever that starts.
If an organization thinks that they have an avenue that could be served through these funds, or if they have a population that they serve who could benefit from a grant from this fund, what kinds of applications are you looking for from organizations?
So anyone who is interested in applying, well, first of all, to be eligible, you have to be a qualified charitable organization in La Crosse County, so a 501c3 or a government institution or an educational institution. Folks will know what that means if they work in this world.
So basically, if you are one, you already know.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
And you just have to go to our website, and right on there is all of the information about eligibility requirements, funding priorities right now, and a link to an application. The application only takes about 10 to 15 minutes to complete. We know folks are swimming in decisions and other work right now, and so we wanted to make access to these resources as easy as possible. The committee who evaluates requests meets daily at 3 p.m., so often organizations know in less than 24 hours if their request is going to be funded, and then we turn around and pay that almost right the next day. So we're talking super rapid deployment of resources, which is really, like I said earlier, unheard of in a grant-making world.
I mean, in grant-making, I mean, you're usually talking about months. I mean,
right.
If you can cut it down to weeks, that is a really ambitious granting program. To get this turned around in 72 hours is really amazing. So let me ask you, in terms of putting together a successful application, are there particular kinds of outreach that you're particularly interested in being involved in?
Yeah, we're really focused on meeting basic needs right now. So making sure people can maintain their shelter, whether that's helping them pay their mortgage payment or their rent, keeping their utilities on, being able to afford groceries, so supporting food banks, or just also giving folks financial assistance to be able to go grocery shopping themselves, especially if they have emergency or healthcare needs that don't allow them to maybe eat what they're able to get at a food pantry. Medications and access to prescriptions has also been a huge thing for us. We want people who are already more susceptible to contracting the virus to be able to maintain all of their normal prescriptions so they can stay healthy. So really, it's focus on those basic needs and what your organization is already poised to do to be able to help your clientele meet those basic needs.
What about religious organizations are sometimes excluded from processes like this? Are there exclusions on that if a religious organization has a social services aspect of their operation?
No exclusion. In fact, we make a lot of grants even before the pandemic to faith-based organizations. We know that they're an important part of the social support network of our communities, and I know many of them have stepped up to try to meet their congregational needs. So yes, absolutely, churches are eligible to apply.
So just, I know you touched on it earlier, but if someone is interested in submitting an application for their organization to provide, to get funding to provide some of these social services to people to help meet their basic needs, how would they find the information they need? What's the website they could apply or a number to call?
The website is LAXCFO.org, commfoundation.com. When you bring up that website, a box will pop up right away that references the Emergency Response Fund with a button to click here to apply. If you have questions about your idea or your project, you want to talk to someone first to get some feedback, then the number, you're going to want to email our program director, Katie Birkedahl, and you'll find her email address on that website page as well, too.
And so the website is laxcommfoundation.com. Okay.
Yep.
So people might be interested in making a contribution still. You mentioned you're still going to keep the fund active. Are you still receiving contributions from people?
We are. They've certainly slowed down from the first few weeks, and I think that that's just all of us are sitting here assessing how long this is going to last, and we want to still continue to be able to meet our own needs. But gifts are still coming in. I think last week we received another $40,000 in contributions from various businesses and individuals. So, yes, the fund is staying open. We're going to continue to remain steadfast in our fundraising as long as we need to continue to meet needs here in our community.
What kind of donations are you looking for?
If you're talking about a gift to the Emergency Response Fund, it's a monetary donation. You can give via credit card, send a check. We can even accept more complicated gifts of stock or mutual funds. We can accept real estate gifts. We can accept the most complicated forms of assets here at the Community Foundation, but certainly the easiest, most simple way to give is by simply giving online with a credit card or mailing in a check.
And there's no threshold for that. Any gift at any amount would be accepted?
That is correct. Sometimes daily we get $5, $10 gifts, and you know, there's no gift too small. Everything coming together is what's able to allow us to do what we're doing. And so if you can help, please do. We promise that it'll get put to good use.
Is there any kind of looking, you know, a little bit of a crystal ball question here, but is there any horizon do you see or any kind of deadline in terms of when someone might make an application to receive funds or when you might stop trying to grow the fund?
There's not. You can see when you go on the website to learn about the fund, whether it's to make a gift or to apply. We are, in real time, we're sharing there the amount of money that's been given to date and the amount of money that's been awarded to date. So we hope that the requests don't exceed the amount that we have to give away. But as long as there's money to give, we're going to continue to give it.
Jamie Schlegel is the executive director of the La Crosse Community Foundation, and they, along with the Great Rivers United Way, are overseeing a fund called the La Crosse Area Emergency Response Fund. Jamie, thank you very much for talking about your work, and thank you for what you're doing to help fill the gaps in our community in this time of need.
Thank you, Ezra.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to find previous episodes of our program and stream them on demand, you can do that at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our show continues in just a second. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest studios. Thank you very much for joining us today. We're talking about how COVID-19 and the recently lifted safer at home orders have affected small businesses throughout our region, in the Cooley region and southwestern Wisconsin. And joining us to talk about that and about some relief that is available for small business owners is Aaron Remler, the business and income developer for Cooley Cap, and Robin Moses, executive director of Downtown Main Street La Crosse. Thank you very much for joining us, both of you. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Sure. And let's start with you, Aaron. We'll talk about how each of your organizations has kind of responded, adapted, reacted to the COVID-19 situation, starting with Cooley Cap. Aaron, what have you been involved with at Cooley Cap?
We've just been looking for ways that we can cultivate resources that will allow us to respond to this from a local perspective. So coming together to work with Robin and Downtown Main Street and our other partners was kind of the first step in figuring out how we could respond to this as a community. So we started talking about how we were going to potentially put this small business assistance fund together, started building it, and were able to start fundraising. CoolieCap has also been doing a lot to help individuals directly that have been laid off or displaced because of the Safer at Home order and businesses shutting down. So we've been trying to respond to this in a lot of different ways, while being conscious of gaps that exist within the developing resource infrastructure around us, so we can really be a solid support for our community along with our various partners.
Robin, what about you at Downtown Main Street? How have your members and how has your organization reacted in light of COVID-19?
Well, this has been, certainly a difficult time for everyone. And the small businesses that are in downtowns like Downtown La Crosse and many of the other communities in Wisconsin are struggling. Having the stay-at-home order put them in a situation where they're just not sure how to move forward. Certainly, one of the challenges of the recent weeks have been how to reopen and reopen safely. So there's just been a lot of communications, person-to-person communications, roundtables, on things like Zoom, making sure that people have as much information in their hands. We've stepped up our direct e-newsletters to weekly, sometimes even a couple times a week to our members to make sure that they are aware of everything out there to help support them, whether it's something that we're doing in our organization or what grants, loans, financial support might be available to them, linking them to seminars and other information to help educate them. So certainly this is one of the areas that we wanted to try to fill that gap, and that is in that financial need. For the first month, people weren't really sure how to move forward. Maybe some were in shock, not sure what to do. So the best thing you can do is to help to educate them and get them thinking creatively about how they need to change their business model to respond to the current need. But then at the underlying source is they just really needed that financial support to get them through. So being able to work with an organization like CoolieCap and Aaron, along with La Crosse County, Brian Fukuda there, we really put this program together, and we've partnered with LADCO, La Crosse Neighborhoods, and other people have come to the table, the Northside Business Association. We want to get the word out to our small businesses that there is an opportunity for them to get a grant that could help them get through the summer or get through this next situation to at least provide them with some hope so that they can kind of keep fighting to save their business. It's a challenge, and we are very happy that our community has really stepped forward. There have been a lot of grants and loans available at the federal level and at the state levels that went very quickly. Here in La Crosse, we were very fortunate. The city of La Crosse stepped up right away and provided small business grants for businesses, and they had about $500,000 to do that, and so they kind of helped fill that gap. This next level of grant that we're looking at is to fill those gaps that were left by people who were either not able to respond fast enough to get grants and loans or were not accepted into some of the programs that were available.
So let me ask you what you're hearing from your Downtown Main Street members and the different people and businesses that you work with. How have their businesses been affected by this? Some of them have had to close, but even those that have maintained some level of service have been affected.
Well, certainly, everyone's been affected. In regards to those public-facing businesses, those storefronts, those are the businesses that are really have been at the greatest risk at the front of this situation when they are forced to close down, and certainly with great understanding to the need to do so for the safety of the general public. But how do they then start to emerge? For many of the retail stores, they started to really create opportunities for online sales. We have worked with some businesses to help them set up online stores. We have more resources coming for them in that regard. We created a Be Local Lacrosse website right away within the first week, so that businesses could list what services they were offering the public, whether it was a retail store or a restaurant or a small service storefront, and then also a page that showcased the businesses where you could shop online here locally. Now, that's a page that we really hope to respond and to have that grow even larger. So how can we take businesses that traditionally only sell face-to-face and help them understand that we are in a current world where setting up an online store is not as difficult as it used to be? We have resources from other business members that are here to help do that. And so some of those things are you know, just a few of the things we've been doing. There's also a Wisconsin State Marketplace that was just created that we worked with from the beginning. So a lot of our lacrosse stores were tested at that first testing level, and they're online now, and that's now gone statewide. But how can we get more of them to do that? You know, right now we hope that things will get better and stay better, but we don't know that. So we have to be able to be very resilient and create new business models within our retail stores, and what does that look like, and how can we as an organization help our businesses do that?
Both of you have talked about helping businesses to react to the new situation, to explore new ways to offer their services to customers in either a different way or to a new set of customers, or to adjust their business model. Talk about establishing this fund, this Small Business Assistance Fund that you both have been so involved in. Aaron, let me ask you just at the fund's beginnings, sort of what was the goal in setting it up?
The goal essentially was to create a fund that would allow us to respond to gaps locally as they began to emerge. We understood that these relief resources were going to be coming from higher levels of government and from other organizations, but we recognized that the delivery of those resources would probably take time. We also recognized that eligibility would probably be limited in the beginning, and that funds were likely to be limited. So we thought it was important to try to cultivate something local that helped us alleviate those barriers and respond to those gaps. So really, initially, the goal was just creating something that could provide a support that was able to be flexible. We knew it was going to have to be a collaborative effort. We knew we were going to have to work together to leverage the individual resources of our various organizations through the partnerships that we've established in the past. So we really just wanted to make something that was accessible, was able to respond to the gaps that we saw as we saw them, and is something that we could set up to be flexible and continue to respond to those gaps further on down the road as the situation continues to develop and circumstances continue to change. Because like Robin said, we really don't know what the future of this looks like. We don't really know what the rest of the calendar year looks like. So we want to make sure that we, as an economic development ecosystem, are here to provide support in the areas where it's needed the most.
We're visiting today with Aaron Remler of the Cooley Cap and Robin Moses of Downtown Main Street in La Crosse, and we're talking about the Small Business Assistance Fund that those organizations, the County of La Crosse and others, have been involved in setting up. We'll tell you how you can find out more about that coming up after this timeout. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you very much for listening. If you'd like to find more information about our show, or if there's a question that you'd like us to find an answer to, you can find contact information, you can find past episodes and more on our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. You're You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our studios in La Crosse, and we're talking today about COVID-19's effect on the business community and some help that is available for small business owners here in the Cooley region. We're visiting with Robin Moses, Executive Director of Downtown Main Street Incorporated in La Crosse, as well as Aaron Remler, the Business and Income Developer at Cooley Cap. Thank you very much for joining us again, and let's start with you, Robin, this segment, and talk about this small business relief fund that we've, the small business assistance fund that we've been talking about. Where can somebody find more information about it, and how do they go about applying for funds to help them get through this time?
The Small Business Recovery Fund is something that we have sent out to all of our business members, and we've gotten it out to all of our associate and our economic development partners here in La Crosse County to get out to the small businesses. The target for this fund is to kind of save the small storefronts in all of our downtown and traditional business districts in La Crosse County. So we've been getting it into the hands of the businesses that are eligible for this fund. They can go online to the Cooley Cap website, and the information that we've been sending out in our newsletters can lead them to that. There's a kind of buttons that they can push to go to the donate button, but also how they want to perhaps apply. This is something also that you can get to from the Downtown Main Street website or contact us directly.
Aaron, let me ask you about contact information since it's on the Cooley Cap website. How do I find the Cooley Cap website?
So you can find the Cooley Cap website by going to cooleycap.org. And along the top banner there, there's actually a COVID-19 assistance page. So that'll take you to a page that's got information on various resources that Cooley Cap has to help folks through COVID-19, including our financial assistance program. And there you'll find the link to the Launch La Crosse Small Business Recovery landing site page. There you can find information about the program itself. You can find a link to the application. And then we are also working to back this program up and keep it moving through a private fundraising effort. So for those folks out there who may still be, a little leery about visiting some small businesses and some of their favorite retail spaces downtown, if you're still looking for a way to support those, we are looking for donations to help keep this fund going and allowing us to help preserve more small businesses in La Crosse County.
And Robin, you mentioned it's also linked on the Downtown Main Street website. How can people find Downtown Main Street online?
LaCrosseDowntown.com, and it will be in the lower footer area, and we'll have a rotator up today also because we are getting a lot of requests for it.
So let me ask you about those safety concerns that people have as businesses are opening up. Obviously, businesses have to make money in order to stay afloat, but there are a lot of members of our community who are just not comfortable engaging in commerce in the same way that they did just a few months ago. What guidance are you giving your partners, Robin, or what have you seen a lot of people doing now that there isn't an official requirement that people either wear masks or that they offer curbside service? What kind of efforts are you seeing to protect members of the public as they engage in commerce again?
Well, I think the best recommendations that we've given our businesses is to really take the time to read through the WEDC guidelines that the Wisconsin State put forward. We've gotten those in the hands of all of our members, and we think it's really important to try to adhere to those guidelines of safety. La Crosse County also has guidelines, so we have instructed our business members to go through those guidelines and to adhere to those as much as possible. And then we've partnered with our local Chamber of Commerce here in La Crosse, and there is a pledge that they can take to reopen safely. So as more businesses go through that process and take the pledge, we'll be following up with an opportunity for them to have a sign in their window and certainly leading people through the Be Local La Crosse website and our individual websites for people to see what businesses are doing everything they can to make the experience as safe as possible. For retail stores, it's a little easier, the guidelines. For our restaurants, they have really come forward and chosen to be very responsible. Recently, we had several restaurants just start to open up, and I'm happy that most of them are doing a really great job adhering to the guidelines and making sure that the experience is very safe for customers who choose to dine out.
Aaron Kulikap, as you alluded to before, has been involved in helping small business owners, but also Kulikap has done a lot to help people affected by the closure of some of these businesses over the last couple of months, or at least the reduced service that they've been offering. What are some of the services that Kulikap has been able to provide to the public who are not small business owners?
Shortly after the Safer at Home order was put in place, Kulikap launched a direct financial assistance program. And essentially what that was designed to do was just allow people to apply for assistance paying some sort of household fixed monthly expense, whether that be rent or utilities, car payments, medical bills. And through our partnership with the La Crosse Community Foundation and a couple other foundations throughout our four-county service area, we were able to get some funds to just start helping those households as quickly as possible.
Robin, you've mentioned a couple of times this website, Be Local La Crosse, and I want to ask you about that because even before all this started, there has been an effort afoot in the last couple of years to encourage people to buy locally produced resources as much as they can. And now we've seen issues with different supply chains breaking down nationwide as people have either not had access to some of the products that they're used to, or maybe they've created a bit of a run on certain products that are typically not produced on a local basis. So talk about that Be Local La Crosse effort and where people can find out more about it.
Sure. You can just go to BeLocalLacrosse.com. It is an opportunity for our businesses to hit the tab to list their business and put in what they offer, but also for the public to go to find out what it means to support local. So there's certainly information about how important it is for our businesses to support local right now, even though it's always been important to support local. I think because of what's happening, people are understanding really what that means. It puts it in a new light. You know, we've moved from a situation where a lot of our spending has moved to online for some people, and they can see what maybe that has done to their local communities. And now when they really need those local communities, they're becoming a little bit more aware of how important it is to support them. So the whole support local movement is something that we've always worked a lot on, but this has certainly put it in a new light of understanding for everyone.
So is there a product or a service that is available on a locally produced basis in La Crosse that people might be surprised to learn is available locally?
Well, that's kind of the exciting thing through this process we have discovered, and also our partner with the Chamber has also discovered a lot of products that are available here in the community that people weren't aware of. So there's an opportunity for people to go onto their website also to discover where some of those supplies are. Here in downtown, we were able to partner with a La Crosse distilling company who started a new business model of creating hand sanitizer. So just recently, they started to produce hand sanitizer, and they started to donate to the public in the beginning, and now they've actually opened up a pop-up store in downtown La Crosse so that people can purchase hand sanitizer here locally. They partnered with us on an opportunity by providing us with half-gallon jugs in a partnership with us to give to our actual storefront businesses. So we're currently having people stop in to pick up their jug of hand sanitizer and just to make sure that people have that, because some people were having a hard time finding it. We're also locally sourcing masks and other things that are needed for our businesses to open safely.
That's Robin Moses, Executive Director of Downtown Main Street Incorporated La Crosse. Also, Aaron Remler has joined us this segment from Kulikap. I want to thank you both for joining us, talking about the Small Business Recovery Fund that they've been involved in. And hopefully this information gets in the right hands and finds the people who will need it. Robin, Aaron, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest studios. Thank you very much for listening to the program this week. There are a couple ways you can get in touch with us. One, if you have a topic idea or a question that you'd like us to answer, you can find that at our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. That's where you can also find previous episodes of the program. You can stream them on demand at your convenience. If you'd like to subscribe to our show, just go to your favorite podcast platform, search for Newsmakers, and hit the subscribe button. I would appreciate that very much. Thanks today to our producer, John Davis, and to you for listening. And please join us next time for another Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio.